As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Onto Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney here on the much dreaded off day after opening day. I get why they got to have it. If inclement weather should push opening day back, nobody wants to sacrifice their opening day. But it certainly does make for a lull. It's like lose-lose, right? Because the Cubs had a wonderful opening day. We'll get to that in a moment. But if they had had a terrible opening day, then you got to wait even longer to sort of get that taste out of your mouth. And I am also dealing with a terrible taste in my mouth this morning from one too many celebratory cocktails after the game. But you know what? It was the full opening day experience. We had remarkably good weather for a Cubs opening day, and the Cubs won. We're going to talk about the nature by which they won. I got to see a bunch of friends. They have beer bats in the stadium now. I mean, I was going nuts on a beer bat or two, and it was a really good day. And today is going to be less than that.
I had a radio spot at Sluggers, and honestly, I forgot Sluggers still existed. For some reason, that whole block there, right, is so different. I assumed Sluggers was also gone. Maybe I got it confused with Mullins. Is Mullins gone? Right. And so, I mean, I just don't go out around there a lot, especially before games, right? If I'm going to a game as a fan, it's going to be with my kids, so I'm not hitting up the Wrigleyville bars. I just forgot what it was like. I walked in there searching for where the score had their setup, so I was searching like the entirety of Sluggers before I finally found them, and I was just like, oh man, I forgot how hard people go before games. Like, this is like taking me in a time warp back to my 20s. So it was kind of a nice to see that. I guess it's probably one of the crazier times post pandemic too, right? Probably one of the more crazy opening days since then. So we just haven't seen that, or I haven't seen that. So it was kind of nice to just like remind myself, oh yeah, fans really get into this and take it to another level. It's nice to have real baseball back. And instead of overanalyzing spring training, we can overanalyze one game that actually matters. So hooray, we'll take away insane conclusions just like we did last episode about the 4 weeks of meaningless games we saw.
Yeah, Brett, I feel like I need a full review of the beer bat. Like, I was very intrigued seeing that popping up on Twitter. Like, I don't think we should just gloss over this as a new item this year.
It's so I have two main thoughts about okay. it. One, it's very sturdy, like almost alarmingly sturdy when you think about what uses to which the bat could be put in certain, you know, there's a rivalry game in July, for example. You can imagine scenarios.
Oh,
so
no.
it's a lot sturdier than I thought. And then the other rub is it's because it's so long, when you go to drink it and you're tipping it back, you are absolutely going to smack the person who's sitting in front of you in the back of the head. But as long as everyone in your section has one, which we did, everybody understands. Like, ah, it's just the beer bat. It's the beer bat. So that was good. It was a good experience. We did not get any. We sort of talked about, you know, if the Brewers were to hit a home run, you can throw it back, of course, as you should. But or you could hit it back. Maybe someone pitches you the ball a little bit, and you take a little beer bat swing, and you know, and get ejected. Sure, of course, it'd be worth it.
I feel like nothing can go wrong with this. You know, like they. Well, there was a time where like cup snakes were like outlawed. That was a big thing. Like, oh, we can't be putting, you know, plastic cups together and form a long chain snake. But let's just have people buy bats and slam beers. I love it. I love where this is going.
The beer snakes were shut
down. We were talking about this in the press box during spring when they sent the press release out and showed that beer bats would be at Wrigley. So I can't remember who said it, but one of the other writers was like, huh, I wonder if this is a sneak attack way of getting rid of the snake cups. And obviously, according to you, Brett, they're shutting them down quickly now.
So. I mean, the rub with that conspiracy theory, though, is technically the beer bats are not available in the bleachers. You've got to circle around to one of the corners of the bowl to get it. But, I mean, come on. We found our way. There were plenty in the bleachers still.
You were on a mission.
I'm not going to not get a beer bat when it is first available at Wrigley Field. So anyway, that was a good fun part of the experience. And I would say I hadn't thought about the fact that it, you know, post-pandemic, you know, we sort of are getting this creep of people wanting to re-experience things and sort of forgetting how tight and tense things were for so many years. It certainly felt different there than it did for the opener the last year, and then certainly the year before that, where the opener was later into the season, and it was like 1,000 people. And I mean, that right, 2021, when they had the opener, it was like it wasn't until midsummer when they had the fully open, which was
right.
The Rizzo home run.
They were still in it, and Rizzo, Cardinals, right. The Cubs were still in the mix
and,
in 21.
But so right. it was nice. I know it was. Particularly good weather for an opening day. I think I get the sense, and I've gotten this, you know, from the internet as well and doing what we do, but also there, I think people are very ready for the Cubs to be competitive. Like, I think there are no expectations of it, but there is like a, I'm ready to buy in if they show they can be decent. Cause I think people are just itching for that because it isn't just that, you had the trade deadline in 2021 and sending people off, and the pandemic felt sort of, the season felt kind of fake. It's really that things have not felt good in terms of Cubs winning and competing and stuff since September 2018, when that huge slide happened. It's kind of been shitty in a lot of ways since then. So I know people are just very eager for something to glom onto this year and be like, okay, cool. Maybe they'll win 85 games. Great. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that there's some sort of optimism because, there's certainly the people in my mentions that still are just like, well, this sucks. Everything still sucks. I posted the lineup and the responses to Miles Mastroboni, like, who is this guy? And I'm just like, well, you guys are obviously just really good in-tune fans. If you don't know that Seiya Suzuki's hurt, they're like, we're going to be playing him in right field all season. It's like, well, no, not exactly. But it's all right. This, you know, like, why don't you give the guy one game before you start hating on him? but I mean, I understand that the lineup, you look at that lineup and you're not going to, you know, be bowled over and say, and that's not what gives you the 85 win vibes. And And honestly, Brett, you know, I like the optimism. I like fans wanting to be positive. But it kind of does suck that 85 wins is the positive spin that we're going to, right? But I'm not gonna crap on that, because I think they're building towards something, and it is more interesting and more entertaining. And my Lord, a 2-hour and 20-minute game, like I'll take more of those as well. I kind of looked at I was in the media cafeteria area. And I was getting myself a drink, and then I was like, wait a second, it's going to be the bottom of the ninth. It's like 3-something. I was like, I'm not even going to, what am I doing? I need to grab my stuff and be ready to go downstairs. Like, I hadn't even fully processed that. I'm like, I haven't written yet. So all the people that are saying that us writers are going to get home earlier, no, we're just shifting our writing from during the game to after the game. So we're not getting home any earlier. There's a lot more paying attention to the game and not like dead time of, screaming at Gordon Wittenmeyer next to me because he's saying something that I completely disagree with, and we just bark at each other for 20 minutes. We don't have the time to do that. So I enjoyed that. I thought it was interesting just that it carried over immediately into the regular season. I'm pretty sure most of the games were pretty short across the league. But overall, the game, I mean, we've all talked about this, right? It played out in the perfect scenario. I loved the Dansby Swanson quote where he's like, this isn't an I told you so moment, but he was close. You know, he wanted to say it, but he's like, it's not yet. You can't do that after one game. But it is kind of cool. He basically was saying it is kind of cool that it played out exactly how we kind of drew it up. And that, defense, aggressive base running, putting the ball in play, not a single extra base hit in the game, right? And, Dansby Swanson, we freaked out about him all spring, and he has 3 hits. The one at bat he made an out, it was 109-mile-per-hour liner to the outfield. Keegan Thompson, I know I was concerned about his velocity, I think it was 94.6, according to StatCast. Yeah, we can round up to 95, give him the 95. So he looked fine. It was that's how it's going to play out. Let's see how the rest of the rotation goes. And when the bullpen, I want to see how the rest of it goes. But it's going to, those games that I still think, I'm not sure if everyone agrees with me, but that double play in the third inning is the biggest moment for me, because that 4-run inning isn't always going to be a 4-run inning. It's going to be a 1-run inning most of the time. So they're going to have to scrape to get these runs, and to win games, it's going to be much more tense. It's going to be much closer. 1 run, 2 runs, scraping them across, because this offense just doesn't look like it's going to, stack runs and stack those big innings on top of each other. So that type of bases loaded, one out, and you have this clean double play that I didn't think was routine, but they made it look pretty simple. I think that's just so huge. And I think we're going to have more moments like that where we see them play really clean defense, really good plays that we almost overlook. And we're like, oh yeah, that's what they didn't have. They didn't have that. So are they a great team now? No, but can they stay in games and maybe win a few more that they wouldn't have years before, the past couple years, because of playing really clean defense and having solid pitching? I think so. I'm not going to go off the optimism of one game, as nice as it was, but I think that we saw what the good scenario is for this team.
I think I've written this story before. I've probably alluded to it on a previous podcast, but I remember the details are a little hazy, but back in 2015, David Ross is the new, catcher on the team, and the Cubs were still in that maybe first third of the season, maybe not quite the All-Star break. And there was a game, maybe in Miami, but the story that I had heard was the Cubs did not turn a double play, and Ross came into the dugout and just started screaming at a young Cubs infielder, we need to turn blank, 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 that double play, just screaming in the dugout. And that was a big part of the Bazio Borzello pitching infrastructure. If you throw this pitch in this location to this hitter, the ball will be hit to this spot. and we absolutely need this defense to turn that double play. And I think you saw, you know, it was only the third inning, but like a little thing that really mattered, that generates confidence, you know, throughout the dugout, throughout the field. And those are the moments that kind of swing games. And if the Cubs can kind of stack those up, you can see a path towards being relevant this year.
Yeah, and it was not routine either. I mean, it wasn't like it's not going to show up on SportsCenter or anything, but it was Nico going pretty hard to his left, long throw to second, runners bearing down. And then, of course, there helped that Rowdy's not a super fast runner going to first. But I thought that was about as clean as you can execute that. And I think you make a good point, Zadiv, that I'm not sure if that gets turned last year, you know, if that infield configuration is a little different. I don't think they pull that off. And again, you don't want to take that too far, one moment from one game as being like translated to an entire season. But not unlike the game itself, it was at least just emblematic of, yes, this is what they have to do if they're going to win.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'm going to leave that. If you guys have anything else you want to say about that, because I want to shift slightly, because I want to say some things about Marcus Stroman, because he kind of blew me away yesterday. I think it's getting not lost, because I think people are generally focusing on the right things. But like, I mean, dude struck out 8 over 6 innings, got 15 whiffs. That's not generally his. I mean, he has games like that periodically, but that's not what you're necessarily expecting from him. You're expecting the 7 ground outs that he got, none in the air, no air outs the entire game. So his line from before the season about the Sanker be Sankin was pretty prescient, because that is how it played out. And I just thought, you know, for as much as we will focus this year on the defense, on the base running, and around being kind of slappy, scrappy at the plate, the starting pitching has the potential to be very good. I just feel like we haven't talked about that a lot, because in spring training, you're focused on so many other things. And I think that he showed kind of what his ceiling still is, even as a post 30 pitcher. And I was very impressed.
Yeah. So I asked him after the game, this was, you know, after he talked to the media as a whole. I didn't want to kind of derail the press conference because I had a bunch of follow-ups and I wanted to make sure we could have a back and forth. But I was just curious about the whiffs specifically, because I just, like, I wasn't going to write about it, but I was like, what was up with that? It was spread. And I'm double checking now, as long as this is updated. It spread around a bunch of different pitches. And I was asking him about how his pitches are labeled, and you know, this is what I saw, and this is what the data's saying, and is that accurate? So this, whatever is labeled a slurve on StatCast, so I think it's multiple pitches in his mind, even two
grips.
Is it
a different shape of a slider for one of those?
Yeah, they're like two different. There's two different sliders within that slurve, I believe. There's one that has more horizontal break, and one that's the more traditional break and drop, right? So I think the one that has more horizontal break is the one that he got advice from Hayden Wisniewski on a couple, like a week ago or so. according to him. He said, and that was his reasoning. I asked him, I was like, was this part of the game plan? Was this just something you expected, you thought you could take advantage of, or did it just happen? And he basically said he thinks it's the slider. It breaks more. It's a little bit more effective this year. And, you know, I don't know if this is going to be a trend. I'd like to be able to look at these pitches a little bit better, maybe rewatch some strikeouts and some swings and misses to see how the pitches were moving and if it was any different than what we were seeing from the press box. But yeah, he immediately responded to that question in a positive fashion and was giving me some back and forth there as to what was going on with the slider. And, you know, I agree. I think I'm very curious about this rotation. Jameson Taillon's end to the spring was fascinating to me. Like, he's getting so much more swing and miss, and I don't want to read too much into it because it's spring, but that sweeper seems to be a nice addition, and he seems to have a lot of confidence in it now. And then his curveball is looking good as well. Like, his breaking pitches, those were two things that they wanted to kind of work on, add the sweeper and kind of fine tune the curveball. And the hope was, yeah, maybe we'll get a little bit more swing and miss. I talked to him, both Taillon and Tucker Barnhart, before spring training ended, and they both kind of didn't want to. Even Ross, I asked him about it. None of them wanted to say he's going to be this strikeout pitcher now, right? I don't think we're going to see a 30% strikeout rate from Jameson Taillon, but I'm very curious to see if we see a tick up in strikeouts. If it gets up to 25%, that'd be really interesting, right? If he can keep his walks at around 4 or 5%. Yeah, those, I think Stroman's debut, along with my kind of optimism about how Taillon looks and then how Wisniewski looks, and then if you can, the two lefties, if they're solid, I think my feeling with Steele is it's going to be a buildup. He's not going to be dominant here, and maybe not bad, but I'm not sure if, you know, I think the Cubs are going to have to battle through some of those starts early on as he kind of really finds his best self. But I don't think that's not to suggest it's going to be disastrous or anything. But I agree. I just think this rotation could be a lot better than at least what projections are saying. And I'm just very curious to see if that's going to play out that way. And then you start the discussion of, okay, can this team really build this pitching and defense oriented team and kind of become Cleveland, Tampa Bay? There's some other teams I'm leaving off, but that have become clearly perennially you trust that those two teams, right, Cleveland and Tampa Bay, will win, even despite the fact that they may not have these obvious superstars littered around the lineup, although Cleveland's lineup is looking a lot better. But anyways, my point is, I think that's the direction you want to go, right? But then you want to turn it. You want to see the Cubs kind of step on the gas at some point and add those superstars that Tampa Bay and Cleveland can't.
Yeah, I just think it comes back to you look at this weekend, the pitching matchups, you look, stretch this thing out through April. I just don't think the bottom is going to fall out on this team, certainly not the way it did last year. There will be injuries, and I think everyone can feel reasonably confident or better about kind of what's waiting in the wings at Iowa, certainly compared to, comparing it to prior rebuilds, some of those windows where just the Cubs are just kind of throwing guys out there and crossing their fingers and closing their eyes. That should not happen this year. Maybe you get Kyle Hendricks, by the middle of May, early May. I mean, that would be a nice problem to have, to figure out where he slots in with these other five guys. And yeah, I think it's a fine balance between giving the Cubs credit and also being very cautious about what they actually have, because they still have to go out and prove it. And, you know, a guy like Taillon, drafted in between Harper and Machado, he should be a really good pitcher, and he was a really good pitcher with the Yankees. And I just think that stability matters a lot. When you're showing up to work every day, when you're going to the clubhouse, and you know the guy on the mound can give you a legitimate competitive effort, that just goes a long way in a really long season.
I think also we should point out that the bullpen usage was exactly what you'd want to see as well. Like if the Cubs were scripting things out, that would have been part of it too, where you just had to cover the seventh, the eighth, and the ninth, and you can go with either Keegan Thompson or Albert Alzolay in the seventh, and then Brad Boxberger in the eighth, and Michael Fulmer in the ninth. I think if we had been predicting it before the game, before the season, that's how we probably would have laid out how the Cubs would prefer the seventh, eighth, ninth to play out. And it did last night, and or excuse me, yesterday, and everybody was effective. And I thought it was nice to see Michael Fulmer in particular, you know, getting his Cubs debut in. He had just a disastrous final spring outing. And, you know, we've gone over this at length, the extent to which any of that matters. But it was an interesting one because it was just sort of like, it seemed like you couldn't tell where any of his pitches were going. And it had the feel of one where you're more like, oh, I just hope he's not, you know, losing his release point, or there's a mechanical issue or whatever. Goes out yesterday and strikes out two, and just he looks exactly like you would want him to look. Bonus props to, got to give to Eric Hosmer on the play there in the ninth where Fulmer knocked one down, it hit his foot, had to make kind of a quick throw, and it was not good. He buried it. That scoop from Hosmer was quite good. That was a very difficult play to stretch and scoop on. So I got to give a little credit there because, you know, who knows? I doubt things would have gone completely sideways from there, but, you know, nicely done.
Yeah, and I'm curious how the bullpen usage is just going to go beyond that, right? Like, when, you know, Keegan had one two-inning outing all spring, so I guess I'm not surprised that it was just a one-inning outing. It very easily could have if Boxberger didn't look super sharp at first, and I was like, oh man, fans are going to freak out here. Why didn't he stick with Keegan? Because Keegan was looking good. So it was nice that Boxberger didn't give the chance to people to start second guessing that decision. But I am like, when are we going to see these multi-inning guys, and who's he going to lean on as the multi-inning guys? Because did Adbert get multiple innings in the spring? I can't really remember seeing that. And is it just Assad now? Is Assad just the multi-inning guy out of that bullpen? What type of, like, how good can Julian Merriweather be, and where does he end up in this bullpen hierarchy? And like the Adbert, Merriweather, Assad trio beyond the trio we saw yesterday are the ones that I'm intrigued by, as far as how's Ross going to use them. When's he going to deploy the multi-inning guy? Is that saved for more steel and or Smiley? I would guess Smiley's probably the guy that he's going to be like, two times through the order is probably pretty good for Smiley, right? Like, I don't remember Smiley being looked at as like a seven-inning guy, seven-plus guy, right? If you can get six out of Smiley, that's a big win from what I'm remembering what he does well. I like Smiley, but that's kind of like what you want to get out of a fourth or fifth starter in today's game. So that, I think the bullpen usage is going to be really fascinating, and I think we'll start to see it kind of unfold this weekend and even against the Reds early next week. But just in general, I think it's going to be great to be able to see Ross in games that matter, that's not like this weird pandemic season, right, where who knows, games that matter. I'm not sure if that's how I describe that season anymore. But I want to see how he handles this. I think from what I've watched of him in 21 and 22, I feel like he knows what he's doing with bullpens. So I want to see it in a season that matters. I want to see it beyond April and May, when things get tough, and that bullpen that you were writing in April and May, suddenly some guy is dealing with something, and now you're down two guys that you trusted that just aren't feeling it, or are hurt, or whatever it is, or going through a rut. How's he going to handle it? How's this summer going to be when the pressure is on and the games matter, and it's not just barreling towards a trade deadline and a sell-off? I mean, I'm sure he can. I trust he can handle the actual pressure of the moment because, you know, he's been through that as a player. But just the strategic side of it, I'm very curious to see how that plays out. You're right, it lined up perfectly yesterday. That's how you draw it up, but it's not always going to be like that. And there are games where the starter is going to struggle to get through three or four innings, and then how's he using that bullpen? I'm curious.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
I just wanted to shift gears a bit. I was curious, you know, obviously the Cubs have what seems to be a pretty reliable, safe rotation. They have like kind of talented but sort of no-name relievers. And to me, I was a little surprised yesterday when they announced the attendance at 36,054, which I'm sincerely not trying to troll here. I was just curious, like, that usually starts with a 4, and if it doesn't, it's like a 38 or a 39. And then, you know, I just, out of curiosity, checked the Nationals, a team that's up for sale and coming off a 107 loss season and, you know, does not nearly have the entrenched fan base that the Chicago Cubs do. And they drew 35,756. And again, Wrigley is spectacular. There was a good crowd, a good energy there. But I just thought, like, I mean, Sahadev and I were talking about this, like, okay, you know, let's hear what the cheers are for Nico or what the cheers are for Dansby. And then, like, you know, that would obviously be a nice detail to put in our stories. And, like, there were good cheers, but it was nothing, like, overwhelming. It wasn't this, like, you know, rattling feeling inside the stadium. And obviously a nice win. It's always a great day to go out to Wrigley. But Brett, I was curious, in your state, how you felt the crowd and environment was, because in our, you know, kind of fishbowl in the press box, you know, when the windows are closed, it felt a little detached. And then it just, that like roar kind of wall of sound to me just wasn't quite there.
Yeah, I mean, it was not, I wouldn't compare it to some of the biggest moments that I've been there for, even particularly big opening days. I think what we're seeing is still the tail end of a period of decline in fan enthusiasm that was in some ways inevitable after the World Series win. I think that was always going to become a challenge in terms of getting people out and getting people excited. And that was paired, of course, with a downtrend in performance, the loss of some familiar faces, and a pandemic. And I think where you're going to see a lot of that marginal additional attendance is going to have to come from the folks who, and I experience this in people I talk to and friends, and sort of I gauge kind of what their feelings are. And it's going to have to come from a team that is seen as a winner, is seen as competitive, is seen as it's worth reinvesting not just literally the money to go to a game, but reinvesting emotionally because it's going to be an enjoyable ride. And I think for a lot of people, it's just not been an enjoyable ride the last few years. And so they've become detached. And I think, you know, you're going to see the 35,000 or so on an opening day because it's Wrigley Field, because most of the enthusiasm is about the experience of the day, the opening day holiday. And I did feel that way too. Setting me personally aside, but that was like the energy I felt, was that most of the positivity was about look around, God bless this place, I'm here with friends, you know, things we talked about at the top of the pod. There is less, I think, among fans, chatter about the things that we have spent the bulk of this podcast on, which is about, you know, how are the Cubs going to win? How, you know, how competitive can they be? Is the rotation sneaky good? All of these things. And I think that just has a long tail of proving it out, such that if you told me the Cubs were competitive into July and then we suddenly did start seeing those bigger swells of noise and enthusiasm and attendance in games, that wouldn't shock me. I think that there is a fan base there ready to do that. But I think, was it one of you guys that was writing about Prove It? I know Greenberg included it in his, but I think that's where things are, is it's just got to, they got to prove it. And I also think, just as a postscript to this, I think because of just the way the world has changed the last few years, for all of, well, maybe all of entertainment, but specifically baseball, I think you're going to see it's hard to get back to quite where it was, you know, 2015, 2016, and even back to 2008, in 2009, that area where 40,000 daily was not at all surprising. I think that's going to be tough to get back to, regardless of how good or competitive the Cubs are, for reasons that are somewhat out of their control. Maybe drop the prices a little bit, and you know, that's a separate discussion. But anyway, that's how I would sum all that up.
I just looked it up. It was 35,112 last year for the opener. And honestly, I didn't remember it being that low. And when I read Patrick's story this morning, I was shocked to see that number, 36, whatever it was. So I don't think you're trolling, Patrick. That was surprising to see. I mean, Brett, you make all good points. I'm just still surprised. It's opening day. It's Wrigley Field. I don't care if it's, I mean, you know, people, I don't know if anybody cares about the weather for opening day in Chicago. I mean, I've seen that place packed, and it's usually much crappier than it was yesterday. Yesterday was nice for opening day in Chicago. So it's a little surprising to me, and I get the prove it angle, especially, and that we're on the tail end of this pandemic, and you know, there are probably some people still holding back in that fashion. But I'm surprised by it. 36,000. I'd expect it to be pushing 40, but maybe we're just not at that point. And I do see a lot of people, you know, I don't like to judge everything off Twitter, but there are still people that just aren't believing in this. They look at this roster and they don't see, the real path to like competitiveness, which I think is an overreaction or just like a very, very pessimistic view of it all. But I also get it. There's no obvious, you don't look at this and be like, oh yeah, yeah. Look at all the history that when you talk about the history that all these guys have, it's like, it really is like a lot of it's like the past, right? Cody Bellinger, Eric Hosmer, some of these guys that we're talking about, like that have all these awards. I think Tucker Barnhart's one of the guys with the gold gloves. I mean, these aren't guys you like are like, oh yeah, look, the Cubs got these guys, right? Bellinger, I'm optimistic for his season, but other than that, it's like you talk about all the hardware. It's like, yeah, that's, I'm not sure if they're going to add hardware, some of these guys. So I get when there is some of that negativity, but I also think, you know, they're building something here, and like we just talked about all podcasts, the pitching and defense, I think should be enough to kind of give that prove it. And like Patrick said before, the bottom shouldn't drop out here. So I think when it gets nice out again, when it's really in the summer, and if they're in the middle of it, if they're even if it's 4 or 5 games out of it, I think as long as they're hovering around 500 and they're playing interesting ball, and maybe some of these younger guys are looking good, some of the younger pitchers like Wisniewski and maybe someone else is coming up and whatever it may be, you want something that the fans can kind of glom onto and say like, yeah, this is exciting, this is fun, I want to come and watch this. Because there was that feeling at the end of 14, right? I'm not sure if I fully see that yet, but I can see it happening. You just want to make sure that you know, certain things happen to kind of draw them in, whether it's Brennan Davis or Matt Mervis or Nico really turning it on, or Seiya Suzuki turning into a star, whatever it may be. You just want some of this stuff to happen so fans are like, you know, clamoring to get to Wrigley.
Yeah, and I totally get why fans are, you know, have to make economic decisions and, you know, how to invest their passion, their time, all that. Not at all criticizing Cubs fans for not showing up, because we all understand the frustration that fans have had and why there is skepticism right now. But this kind of dents what was like the whole reason why the Ricketts family bought this team, like what the Cubs like enduring kind of business model was. And, you know, I think it is, you know, could be a a good thing for them to not just kind of take for granted that 3 million are going to show up no matter what. There are ways to get creative. I would agree with them if you look at the whole scope of an 81 game home schedule and all the different pricing tiers and areas. Like, there are affordable ways to go to a Cubs game that maybe you can't find with other professional sports teams in Chicago. So, you know, I get all that, but there's clearly a strain on the business side here because the baseball side hasn't kept up. And I think that's part of why Dansby Swanson is here on a $177 million contract. And that's why you had Jed Hoyer yesterday referencing Miguel Montero's We Are Good t-shirts, because every, you know, great team, I guess maybe except for like the Yankees, but like there is that like in between stage of like, even in the clubhouse, they're like, wait, do we have something figured out here? And that's always like fun to see happen. There's just no guarantee that you get there. So I think these little moments, whether it's the double play we talked about earlier, or Marcus Stroman like having a career year and then opting out of his contract, will be like stuff that I think that's part of why too we haven't talked about Stroman as much, or why there isn't as much like, okay, but like, because he's not quite a building block. Like when you sign a guy with two guaranteed years and an opt-out. And that's why finally now you have a Tyone, who, as Sahadev can attest, is like a super smart guy, a really interesting guy who just like can talk the game, can talk about other stuff. I mean, people just rave about Trey Mancini. I mean, listening to Dansby Swanson, it's like every answer sounds like a shareable content clip that like Marquis's going to put on as a tweet. Like, just like, that's just how he talks in these like full paragraphs that like, you know, if this guy hits even just a little bit, like Cubs fans are going to love this guy. So you can see kind of the outlines of, you know, what could be a good team. And I think the best part for us is like, we've spent years talking about this of like what maybe they could be doing or what might happen. It's like, they've made some real choices here, and now we'll see whether or not they're the right ones.
That's a good way to put that, that they, it's clear. We can say this even just after one game, because we could say it before the game, that it, in a lot of ways, it's very clear that the Cubs have gotten a version of the team they wanted to put together. It may be a little early in some respects, but this is what they wanted. And so it's sort of like, okay, let's see how it goes. That doesn't make for huge attendance numbers because people are, like we said, going to want to see that it actually goes somewhere. But it does, I think, underscore why, for me personally as a fan, I'm more excited about this season than some in the recent past, even ones that still featured a lot of big names, because it was sort of, you knew what that team was. You kind of knew what the issues were potentially going to be. You knew what the good version was going to look like. You know, this is a different model, and I'm excited to see how it plays out over the next 161. I don't think the Cubs are going to give up another run this season. We'll see. They haven't so far. I was checking the stats earlier, and they have not given up a run yet this season. So we'll see. Eventually they might let in one or two, but you know, we'll get there when we get there. We will be back on our two episodes a week cadence here in the regular season. So that means we will be back at you early next week to wrap up kind of this Cubs Brewers series and think more about what this team can and will be. So we appreciate you, as always, listening to us as we embark on a new season. It's On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor. You can get my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That is Patrick Mooney and Sahadev Sharma. Get theirs at The Athletic. And hope you have a great weekend and bask in the glow of a nice opening day win. Take care, all. We'll be right back.